Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 412. My name's James Gilmore. Joining me today is Emily Soden.
Hello. Sorry, I was literally in the middle of taking a drink of water.
How very dare you. This is incredibly unprofessional. This is what happens when you miss a week.
Yeah, I'm already lax. I'm done. You may as well kick me off now.
That's it. One swallow. And that sounded wrong.
And
also Glenn Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's here and full of beans. We've both just come back from Helsinki.
Yes.
And sounds like you've got lots of sleep and are all pep and vigour.
A little bit, yeah.
Whereas I didn't sleep that much, and so I probably sound a little bit less energetic than I otherwise would for this recording. How did things go in our absence? Mostly things aren't on fire, so I assume it went all right.
Well, we've managed to hide most of the stuff. Yeah, it was fine.
Wait, what?
No, nothing.
No illicit...
There were definitely no drug deals, no dance parties, no all-night raves.
See, Harry looked very shifty when I spoke to him earlier today. He had that League of Gentlemen, we didn't burn him!
Isn't that just Harry's eyes. Normal face?
Oh, yeah, damn, that's true. He's very difficult to read, that man. Right, what have we got going on this week? We've actually got loads. So, news stuff. Let's talk about the fact that you can now play Minecraft with any friend on any platform. How's about that? We've got information about how to identify whether games will or will not run on iOS 11 before you do the update. Valuable information. Plus, new releases including No Man's Sky alike more fight. And finally, The Witness has arrived on iOS. We'll also talk to Andre from Atypical Games behind Radiation Island and Radiation City and other upcoming thingies. But first, it's the news. Okay, so big news this week. The new Minecraft update titled Better Together has now dropped on all of the platforms except for the Nintendo Switch, which we'll get to in just a second. So, if you've got Minecraft Pocket Edition, it's not called Pocket Edition anymore, if it has had the update. Now, your Minecraft Pocket Edition is just Minecraft. That's nice, isn't it? It's like legitimizing all the mobile versions, which needed qualifications. Like, Minecraft Pocket, because it's not proper. No, it's all just Minecraft now. And it's not just a title name, it means that you can now play cross-platform across pretty much all of them. So, Xbox One can be played alongside it on your Android device, and it's just everybody group hug. Isn't it lovely?
Do you know what? It's pretty rad, though, when you think about it.
It's pretty cool, but didn't they unlock this accidentally?
Did they? When did this happen?
I thought I read something where they were like, we accidentally discovered that you can now cross-play and stuff. Maybe I'm just talking rubbish. I should do some research.
They must have done that ages ago if they did.
Yeah, I'm sure they
announced this in the summer, didn't they? No, in the Indies showcase. No, not in Indies. I don't know. Somewhere. Shoot me.
They've never announced it. There isn't even a game called Minecraft. Yeah, I imagine they would have stealthed some code in earlier to lead up to this, and someone's clearly uncovered some kind of changelog that has information about it, or even some of the code itself. But what it highlights is, firstly, it's a nice thing that you can play with everybody regardless of platform. That's nice. And given the scale of Minecraft and the popularity of it, it's obviously great to be able to bring communities together like that and mm-hmm. not worry about what device you've got. Minecraft is now like just, it's almost like Google. It's that thing that's accessible to everyone on everything and can be used together with everybody. So that's really nice. That's a good thing. It also highlights how this stuff could technically be done with so many other games if the platform holders would allow it. If it's built on the same engine, then I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but it's a thing that they can do. And often what it is as much resistance from the platform holders saying like, well, no, because if we let everybody play Destiny like across all the platforms, PS4 and Xbox playing together, mass hysteria, then it means that there's no incentive anymore to buy on one platform or the other.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why they've done it and things, but this is why I like Rocket League. Rocket League is full across the spectrum. They're good guys.
Actually, I've never played Rocket League once in my entire life.
Really? Right?
Yeah, no, really. I mean, I'm not a footy fan, and I know technically it's not really footy because it's got cars and that in it, but I've never bought the game, so I've never played it.
I think it's something you would like. I think you would really like Rocket League.
Everyone seems to. But I didn't know that was proper cross-platform across everything.
Yeah, yeah. Because my friends, my usual gaming friends, I've got PC and some of my friends have like PlayStation and Xbox and things like that. And we always play across platform. Like if you have a PS4, you can link in so long as you've got the game ID.
Oh, I see. Oh, very good. Hmm. More gamers should do it. I think it's a useful feature. And from a consumer perspective, it's very useful. It's just, as I say, if you're the platform holder, maybe you have reasons. Sony's been a holdout on this a little bit. They made some comments about like, yeah, well, we would do cross-platform, but we can't ensure that our customers will be protected from Microsoft's customers.
What?
Like in the chat and that.
Oh.
Basically Sony calling all Xbox One users scum.
That's fair enough. Have they played online gaming at all? Ever?
Yeah, par for the course, I suppose. But as I mentioned at the top of this, not on the Switch yet. Switch is still Pocket Edition. They are apparently working on it, and it involves cooperation with Nintendo and getting things to work. I mean, online's never exactly been Nintendo's strong suit, so I'm not shocked that it's maybe taking a little longer. Plus, it's a relatively new platform and everything, so maybe more hurdles and to jump over. But it should be on the way. But in the meantime, let's all go and play Minecraft together. Aww, isn't it lovely?
So sweet.
Less sweet, however. Painty survival horror, Layers of Fear Legacy, is coming to the Nintendo Switch a little bit later this year, apparently. This appeared as part of the news that a lot of games are coming to the Switch and are going to be announced at the Tokyo Game Show. You covered this thing, didn't you, Glenn?
I've been basically excited for Tokyo Game Show for ages because I'm waiting for a Tales of game to be announced for Switch. And there's been rumours for ages, and you know I love that franchise.
You're gagging for it.
Yeah,
I'm just hoping 42 games. It's like, better be a Tales game.
Yeah, I'm just hoping basically that like loads of JRPGs are just announced and flood on the platform next year. That's my dream.
It may come true, Glenn. I mean, 42. That's a 42 or 43 or something. That's a healthy lineup of new stuff, and it's a good answer to a lot of the criticism that the Switch gets. It mostly gets praise for being great, but the recurring criticism is that like, oh, there's no games on it and there's nothing to play beyond a few kind of big tentpole ones. So the announcement of a lot of ports of older games, we talked about Doom last week, and now Layers of Fear, which is a decent-ish. I mean, I played it. I've got it. It's all right. Like, it's got its idea, and the idea mostly is wandering around a mansion with paintings, like, doing weird things, like changing and stuff, which is great. But it's very much based on the notion of, like, you walk into a room and the door closes behind you and you turn around and suddenly the door's gone, and then you turn around again and the room's changed. Yeah. Like, which is well spooky the first time it happens. 15th time, slightly less so. So it doesn't quite follow through for me, but it's still sort of worth playing, especially if it's on the cheap. But what is it that you want? So you've got your Tales of games. You want that to be in the 42. Em and Glenn, what is your ideal Switch titles, whether that's a port of a game from another platform that you'd like to play handheld, or a Nintendo IP which hasn't been covered yet? What do you want on the Switch? What's it missing?
Well, one of them is everyone's going to know what one of them are.
Yes.
Which obviously is Stardew Valley, which I'm still waiting for the date for, but that's okay. Yes. I understand why it's taking so long. But
that's been confirmed. It's definitely on the way, so
yeah,
you're all right there.
It's absolutely on the way. It's just that apparently like there's some stuff in Nintendo, like everyone's got to agree on a release date and it's taking ages or something. But to be honest, like, I'm just stoked to see anything. And I know that sounds really stupid, but anything that comes to the Switch is just like another tick in the box. Like, I've got so many games on the Switch now, like, I don't have time to play them all.
No, really?
Yeah, like, legit. I saw this, actually, I laughed earlier because I was on the Reddit subreddit for the Switch, and someone had put a post. I originally thought that after I was done with Zelda, I wouldn't touch my Switch again until Super Mario Odyssey, but now I've got so many games, I don't know which one to play. I was like, that's how I feel.
So much of the chatter surrounding it is people saying, oh, there's nothing to play. I guess it depends on whether you like indie games.
Yeah. That does hit the nail on the head until some more bigger ones come out next year, of course. But
because people have a nasty habit of saying, like, oh, there's nothing to play. And what they mean is, there's only two AAA games out this week.
Yeah, of course. Because people are impatient, but that's okay.
I'm going to chuck some games on this damn list now.
Go on.
Basically, I'd love to see... This has been rumoured already, but apparently the Dark Souls trilogy might come to Switch.
That like, would in be, one pack. That would be rad.
Yeah. So I'm going to say that.
See, I heard that, and I was like, right, so...
Come on, Dark Souls 1 and 2 could definitely run on it. 3 no, would nothing, might no, struggle.
I don't mean running on it. It could run Dark Souls 1 and 2 just fine, because I say they were PS3 Xbox One titles. Sorry, Xbox titles.
Okay.
However, how many broken Switches is that going to result in?
It's the most stressful
game to play in the world. And even if you're not one of these people who throws pads at walls, which I'm not above giving them a jolly good clench and twist when I'm getting hacked off.
Same, yeah.
You can't do that to your Switch.
Maybe they could force you to play it in docked mode, so there's no risk.
Maybe they could. The moment it goes handheld, they just like it gets much easier. They just drop the difficulty, scale accordingly. Because otherwise, so many Switch controllers are just going to be snapped off the side of the screen, like in just rage.
Yeah,
that's a bold move if they do that.
I just think it'd be so good though. Because I was playing on PS3 Dark Souls 1 a few weeks ago, right? And I got to this bit where there's that guy with the big hammer in the tower, and he kept killing me, and I was like, oh god, I hate this. So I'd turn the PS3 on, go back in, get killed like 3 times, and turn it off in disgust. And I kept doing this. And then when I was playing like games on my Switch and finding I was just going in for 5 minutes, I was thinking, Dark Souls would be perfect for this. Because that ease of just like loading up. Yeah, because like a lot of time in Dark Souls, you spend just sort of stuck at a boss, and you just want to run from your save point, try and beat him, and then you just kind of get sick of it and turn your PlayStation off or whatever. But like if it was on Switch, you could just, as you're out and about, you could just keep having a bash.
That element would work well for picking it up, going, oh, and putting it down again. Mm. So that's good. However, there's lots of stuff in Dark Souls that doesn't work as a mobile game. For example, there's no pause.
Yeah, I mean, you could press the home button.
I suppose it would freeze the game. That would include a pause in Dark Souls, because it doesn't have one. If you pause the game, then...
What happens on PlayStation if you press the sort of home button?
I don't know. I haven't got Dark Souls 3. No, I've only played 1 and 2 and Bloodborne.
Because I'm pretty sure that just freezes gameplay, whatever's going on any game. So, I mean, it would be a solution, you're right. It wouldn't be the same as pausing, but it'd be something.
Yeah. For me, it's just the rage, the difficulty rage. Is there anything else you had in mind?
Yes. Persona 5. Which was built PS3 as well, so it has actually launched that platform in Japan. So it would, a paired back version might well run on the infrastructure.
And they had 4 golden on the Vita, so that would fit. That would fit.
Yeah, maybe a double pack. All of the Professor Layton's and the Ace Attorney's in one big, maybe 2 separate game packs, but that would be sweet. We've already got Resident Evil announcements. I would have said I would love to have played Resident Evil 1, 2, 3, like a lot of them in one pack, but I think that's unlikely at this point because, you know, Revelations 1 and 2 have just been announced. I think we'll probably hedge the bets with that for a while.
There's lots of untapped franchises when you list it all out, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's lots to come, loads of potential.
Yeah, mostly ports, exciting. To be honest. Like Emily said, I'm just hoping for a flood of... Well, ports, really. I'm happy with that for right now. If, like, loads of franchises, like, you know, Persona and all that just getting out, so I don't think anyone's really going to complain.
Well, TGS is up this weekend, so we're going to get a whole bunch of confirmations hopefully next week on what is on its way, so we'll keep you informed. Finally, before the interview, if you are on the fence about updating to iOS 11, we understand. Concern is that a lot of your games that you may have bought, your vast gaming library, may suddenly become useless when you update your phone. So lots of developers are addressing this, and they are updating their apps to 64-bit, but not all of them. So, we have a little solution. If you go onto your iOS device, right, go to Settings, then General, then About, and then Applications. And what that will do is it will give you information as to what apps are compatible with iOS 11 and what aren't. It'll be under the updates available. So there's no updates available, and it should give you the details and tell you whether they're going to give you access to the game in the 64-bit platform. So if you're a bit hesitant and you're really worried, go to the list, see what's updated and what isn't, and then you can make your decision from there. Bringing large-scale open-world games to iPhones, iPads, and Android devices has always been a bit of a challenge. Getting Far Cry or Fallout onto a device of that size, not necessarily the easiest thing in the world. However, Atypical Games took a run at it with Radiation Island maybe 2 years ago, and Radiation City recently hit mobile devices globally. I'm joined by Andre from Atypical Games. Hello, Andre.
Hello, James.
Now, as I sort of inferred at the beginning there, it's a big old thing to bring games of this scale. And thinking of Radiation Island, what did you think going into that game, and what were the challenges that you were faced with when you were like, how are we going to make something this big work well on mobile?
The challenges from the technical side were not so big. Basically, all our games are open world, including the flight games, the tank combat games, and so on. So it was just a matter to make the visuals sharp for from the ground level. We were able to do this because we are using our in-house built game engine. We don't use third-party technology. We started a long time ago. So initially, the first game we built for iOS in 2009.
Okay.
But our roots are even deeper in the mobile industry because most of them, or fast, come from Java games.
Right, I see. I saw you're way back at the 3310 end of the mobile gaming land.
Yeah.
Wow. The game itself, the series, I should say, because you've got Radiation Island, which has then recently been followed by Radiation City. An easy way to describe it to people who haven't played it before is, think of games like Stalker, think of games like Fallout. We're talking a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and essentially your aim is to survive in very, very harsh conditions. I'm guessing games like these were inspirations for the Radiation series?
Yeah, we were. We played a lot of Minecraft when Minecraft was in beta stage. So, okay. We got in love with it. Then we played some Rust. And we realized that the mobile market doesn't have a realistic survival game. So we decided to build one for ourselves, and this is how Radiation Island started.
Because we covered it when it first came out, and there was actually quite a lot of excitement surrounding it. I do the video stuff over on AppSpy, and it got quite a lot of views. I think people were impressed to see something of this scale running on a mobile device, on an iPad. You said about there wasn't so much the visuals that were the biggest challenge in the game. What was the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge from our studio point of view was animation. We didn't quite solve this yet, even in our latest game, because we were specialized in vehicle combat simulations.
Yes, things like the Sky Gamblers.
Exactly, Sky Gamblers and Battle Supremacy series and Infinite Tanks. For Radiation City, we wanted to bring things on the next level, so we were able to recreate Pripyat as it is in real life.
Just outside of Chernobyl, isn't that right?
It's just near the Chernobyl, and we are working on a follow-up for Radiation City.
Okay.
Where the player will be able to experience the Chernobyl power plant as it is now.
Oh, I see. So that's the third installment in the series.
Exactly. We are using this Radiation City, the feedback from the players that we get and together with refining Radiation City, so fixing all things that players don't like.
It's got like lots of good reviews actually on the app stores, that people can come back and say like, I've got to a particular area and I appear to be stuck and can't get out, or this is incredibly challenging. And I think in the case of open world games, which don't necessarily lead you by the hand and leave it up to the player to explore, they can be quite daunting things to play. Do you think it's difficult to try and sell that sort of thing to a mobile gaming audience, perhaps a chunk of whom are used to playing what would arguably be considered like soft puzzle games?
It's you are right. It's very hard to sell this on the mobile market. So, but it's our fault. It's because we love hardcore games, and we wanted to share this experience with mobile players. We get feedback that people find it really hard and we have to nerf it down.
Right, okay.
But this is, let's say, a luxury of being independent. We are free to do whatever we like. Currently, surviving on the premium market, it's really tough.
Yes, because it is a $4.99 game, and more now that's getting a tougher sell.
Without any in-app purchase and without any ads.
Yeah, yeah, it's a proper premium, inverted commas, is what we call it now. Have you found it challenging dealing with the control system? I have a difficult relationship with first-person shooter games on touchscreens. I always feel like those controls feel like a little bit of a compromise.
You are right. It's okay. Correct what you say. And we are working on it as we speak, by the way.
I see.
Basically, we internally do a test. Everybody asked us why we didn't do Battlegrounds game. Mm-hmm. It's very hyped right now. Since we got this question from, I don't know, 5 sources, they said, why not? Because it's quite easy and we have all the elements. The jeep, the plane, the assets, everything.
Yes, you do. You do. You've got the vehicle sections in this one.
We are currently building a prototype for that, and we will check if we enjoy it.
You moved away from other games. Like Infinite Tanks is a game we were actually quite a big fan of in the office. We gave, I think, very good reviews to it, and I certainly enjoyed it. What's the challenges between moving from something which is essentially vehicular exclusively to transitioning to something like a ground-based first-person shooter? Was it a real learning curve, or do they actually feel very similar in certain ways?
We started this learning curve with Battle Supremacy. Battle mm-hmm. Supremacy, it was a World War II tank simulation game. But with Infinite Tanks, we wanted to do something that was not done. Because, you know, the tank area is very crowded.
Yeah.
And we thought, let's come with some new concept. And the new novelty was that you could build your own tank using the parts that you received. Again, no in-app purchases, so everything premium.
Mm.
So it's a very complex game. And I think from the vehicular perspective, our best game.
I see.
The problem is that the premium market is really, really bad. And the project was a big loss.
I see, okay. Because as we touched on, it is more and more difficult to get people to accept the idea of paying for anything at this point, certainly for the initial investment blind.
It's even worse. So we thought it's a full experience, you know, and we realized that many players don't even want to bother about building their own vehicles. So we have also in development a game that will come out pretty soon, even before Radiation City Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. We have a game called Sky Gamblers Infinite Jets.
Okay.
Which is based on the same principle as Infinite Tanks. So the vehicles are built from parts.
Mm-hmm.
But we took out completely the vehicle building part. So we generated them.
Right, I see. So they're prefab.
Exactly. For me personally, it's kind of sad.
You are fond of the customization. Exactly. You like to pimp your tank.
Exactly.
So does this change also mean that you're considering free-to-play as a payment system?
We cannot afford doing this because free-to-play is a different area. In order to go to the free-to-play way, you have to invest a lot in... I don't know how to say, like gray area.
UA?
Yes.
If you're not a businessy person on the podcast and you're listening, user acquisition is what UA is.
Yeah, so we thought about it, but we will do it only if we find a partner that can take care of that part.
Well, I mean, that's what Nintendo did in many ways. They partnered with DNA because they were a company which understood social gaming and free-to-play systems and an area previously Nintendo hadn't really gone for. So even, you know, they sought advice from very, very big companies. And people assume that you can just change the price tag at the last minute, perhaps. And it's a misunderstanding, as we've talked to developers, and they've said that you need to build a free-to-play game from the ground up, knowing it's going to be free to play and understanding what that means and how that affects the game's design. There are a couple of examples of games where they were like premium until the last minute and then they bottled it and made it free to play.
It doesn't work.
And it never works, no.
You are absolutely right. But it helps to have the core gameplay ready.
So with Radiation City Chernobyl, you're thinking of, I mean, if you're working on something else in the meantime, maybe another year or two possibly before that hits the app stores?
It's much sooner.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. We believe it will be like February.
Oh, wow. Really soon then?
Yeah.
Okay.
The assets are already there. We played inside the power plant. It's nice.
It's nice. I assume that's nice in the grim and dark and scary sense of the word. Nice.
Yes.
Finally, regarding Radiation City, are you planning on rolling out updates? There's additional content to come?
For sure, we will iron out the unpleasant parts.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bug that we are still chasing and we cannot reproduce it.
Oh, really?
Yes. But yes, we will have updates.
Well, we look forward to seeing what you guys do next. And thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Out and about this week, let's start with the biggest release, arguably, which is The Witness. It's a game that came out last year, Jonathan Blow's first game after Braid, the time-bending indie platform. And this is a first-person puzzler set in this island, this colourful island, where you have to wander around, essentially solving the same type of puzzle over and over again, but it gets harder and more complicated. And it's been quite a divisive game, insofar as some people it was their best game of the year, other people drive some absolutely mental, and they... Like, the amount of people who dropped off of The Witness after, like, about 6 hours, who were just like, screw this game, it's absolute. I'm just stuck, I've got no idea what to do, the game's not telling me where to go, this is completely awful. They've been talking about bringing it to iOS, like, since it was originally announced as a game, and I just thought it wasn't happening anymore, because it had gone completely silent. It is $9.99 or $9.99, which is... a lot cheaper even than the current console list price. So this launched basically full price, I think £35 or £40. So bargain for a start. The question I had was whether it would hold up controls-wise and performance-wise on an iOS device. And I've played about an hour of it. I don't know how you guys haven't yet, have you?
Not yet.
Okay, so I tried it on an iPad Air 2, which is basically an iPhone 6S. So first thing to say is it definitely runs. I've got a video of it up right now on AppSpy, which went up today, and you will be able to see that it looks fairly decent. Now, it's not going to be the best-looking version of the game. So you'll notice that a lot of jaggies going on there. The anti-aliasing isn't great. There's a bit of pop-up and all that sort of thing. However, the world itself is already quite low poly looking. It's a very deliberately stylized art style, so it's all very almost cel shaded, but not quite. So it's not one of these things where it's all about the incredibly hyper detailed textures. It's about big bold looking block colors, and it still sort of fits. It still looks decent. It actually has something in common with Morphite in that regard, the other big release this week, where it's very a low poly crude look. I'd always wanted to play it on iOS and touchscreen since they announced it, because the puzzles, if you're not familiar with them, are those mazes, like the mazes you'd get if you went to a restaurant and they give you a maze and some crayons if you are a tiny child, or if you ask really nicely, where you need to trace your finger along and find the exit. And basically the puzzles are all that, but they're all iterations on that, like loads and loads and loads and loads of them. And it doesn't push you down a line, doesn't push you down a corridor and say, well, solve this puzzle, then this one, then this one, then this one, and do that. It just spits you into this open world and you're in a zone. And you have to wander around and work out what puzzles need to be solved in what order to open another puzzle to access a door, which will then, you know, vanish a force field. You can walk through and go to a different area. But it really is about you exploring a world, working out on your own what to do. And that is one of the main things that people got cross with when they were playing it. Obviously, the touchscreen puzzles are brilliant on iPad. They work amazingly, better than they do on the PlayStation or Xbox or whatever, because on those games, you had to, like, you know, push up, down, left, right on your analog stick to move around the maze, essentially. Here, you just draw with your finger. So you're just tracing your finger along a line. You put your finger on the screen to hit the start point, and then you just go, woo, and you doodle it, which is what people were doing to try and solve the puzzles anyway. They were, like, copying the puzzles down onto paper or onto their iPad and trying to work out solutions that way, like, in their own time. And here, it just lets you do that. You can sort of, you could screen capture it on your iPad and then, like, just keep it in your picture folders. And then when you're not playing the game even, you could be just, like, you know, working out ways to fix it, go, ah, and then go back and solve it later. So it feels incredibly intuitive and really perfectly suited. The movement controls, they don't have dual sticks. It's just tap. So you tap to move. So you'll tap a place on the ground, a little beacon will pop up and you'll start walking towards that. And then you can drag your finger around on the screen to look around. We've seen this control system before in lots of first-person shooters. It's usually not very good for first-person shooters because you need to be, well, shooting at the same time. And that's where things get more complicated. There's more buttons to press and all that business. There is no combat in this game. It is just walk around and solve puzzles. So for that, you can play this game with one hand. And it doesn't feel odd. It doesn't feel weird because there's no need for you to be running around at really high speeds or anything. At least not at the moment. I've only played an hour of it, so there's been no time challenge bits or anything. But I think it sits really quite comfortably on iOS. I'd like to see it running on a super top-end device. I'd like to see how it performs on the iPhone 8 or X. But I'm happy enough with the way that it runs on the Air 2. The real question is whether you will like the game. I think the port appears to work well, but whether it will really, really irritate you or whether you'll love it is an entirely different matter. We're going to do the review for it, and that'll go up on AppSpy as well, so wait for the verdict later once we've played it a bit more, worked out the kinks. But as I say, £10, £9.99, $9.99, iPhone, iPad, no Android at the minute, but we'll keep you updated if it does. Glenn, there was a couple of things you wanted to talk about. What is it? Is it Stormbound? Stormhold?
Stormbound? Yes, Stormbound's just come out. It's been published by Kongregate, who are good at these sort of games. It's essentially Clash Royale. It's a battler. You've got two towers. The first person who gets the tower destroyed loses, or destroys the other person's tower wins, I should say it like that. And as usual, you've got to build a deck of cards. You've got four you can use at any point, which are randomly selected at the bottom. You can place them on a grid-shaped map. Now, how it differs from Clash Royale, it's like turn-based rather than real-time. So each of you has a turn, at which point you can place a card on the map. And each card has a speed number attached to it, which is how many spaces forward on the grid that character in the card will move each turn.
I see. So they're a little movement allowance, if you like.
Yeah, essentially. And they do that automatically. So you place it on the screen. When it lands, it doesn't move. But then the next time you have a turn, it'll move X number of steps forward. The furthest unit you have forward on the map is your, I think it's called line of attack. Wherever that line is on the grid, you can place units right behind it. So you can actually push, like in real war, you can actually push your line of attack forward.
So it's kind of like expanding your territory, like where how much of the map you control.
Exactly. And then when your units reach the other side of the map and hit the tower, depending on the unit number, they deal that number of damage to the tower. And then when it's destroyed, you win. There's other stuff. So most of the cards you get are units. They have like a strength score and a speed score. Strength is just basically number of units. So if it has five strength, it's five units on the grid. If it's two speed, it'll move two steps on the grid each turn. And then you also have towers, which you can place, which either defend from enemies or improve like the abilities of units ahead of them in the grid, stuff like that. Or they might just shoot off spells each turn to destroy a certain number of units. It's good for people who like to take their time. It doesn't have that sort of pace of Clash Royale, which is either a good or a bad thing. If you play Clash Royale for the speed and sort of just reacting and being a bit twitchy, you might not enjoy this. But I kind of prefer it because I've always been the sort of person who prefers to sort of take my time, think strategically, and it's a bit more like chess than anything else.
Funny, that's very similar to what Harry said, actually. It's like you don't get the sort of frantic end game last minute, oh god, race against the clock business. It's more about the sort of stop and think, tactical strategy sort of thing, but it's still very accessible and easy to pick up.
While you're sort of attacking your opponent, you've got to second guess what their defense is going to be and try and react to it before they do it as well. So it can get quite deep. It's definitely got a lot of tactical depth to it, which is nice. It's not just a sort of simplified Clash Royale. It's just more of the thinking man's version.
I see. That sounds interesting. I actually do want to give this one a look. We've given it a gold award from Harry's review, but you can obviously download that for free. iPhone, iPad at the minute, probably Android. It's got to be Android. It's free to play. Have you been getting all point and clicky on that there Switch?
I have been getting both pointy and clicky, but on the iPad.
Oh, it's iPad. Oh, I didn't realise. Okay, so this is Thimbleweed Park.
Yep, just to confuse matters entirely, it's actually on iOS and the Switch.
Ah, so we're both splendidly right.
We're both okay.
This is like kind of big deal because obviously, we've still got point-and-click adventure makers around, and we've seen lots of revivals of old ones. This is a new game from Ron Gilbert. So this is like the Monkey Island dudes making another point-and-click adventure in that style, but now, new, fresh.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's actually like, I gave it a gold award, deservedly so, because it felt old school. Like, it actually genuinely, like, if you think about point-and-clicks from the 80s, this is it, except it's been modernized a little bit. There's, you know, jokes and pop culture references and things like that.
Mm.
And it's just very, very good.
So the angle is, it's like a mystery, an adventure? What is it?
Thimbleweed Park revolves around this body that's been found under a bridge, and these two agents come in and have to investigate why he's dead. But the whole thing is that you end up traveling with five different characters, all who don't seem like they should be linked, but who end up being linked because of this whole mystery of Thimbleweed Park.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Like it so far?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like a weird X-Files episode.
Well, that's exactly like, and the thing is, the two agents, they are, I think, supposed to be kind of Mulder and Scully-ish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Because you got like the grumpy ginger one and the sort of...
The grumpy ginger one. How dare you talk about my love, Gillian Anderson, in that way?
To be fair, yeah, I do take that back because Gilly is, you know, she is love and she is life. But each character kind of has a little bit of a darker past. You're not quite sure how they fit in and what they're really doing in Thimbleweed Park and stuff. And it's just very entertaining. The thing that tickled me most of all, because I tried it out on the Switch, I was playing it for like 3 hours yesterday on the Switch, I think.
Mm-hmm.
On the iPad, I chose the casual way of doing it. And on the Switch, I chose hardcore.
Okay.
Since there's no way to die in this game, it's all about the puzzles.
Right. So,
when I was doing the casual version, the puzzles aren't that difficult to solve. The hardcore version, on the other hand, if you see something that looks out of place, I think I was wandering around this mansion yesterday, I opened a cupboard, and loads of the cupboards were empty, and then there was an empty glass in one of them.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, why is there an empty glass in that? And I press pick up glass, and I picked up the glass. And there's a whole elaborate scheme of things you didn't know you could pick up, and you kind of do, and then suddenly all the pieces fit together, and you figure out how to do stuff, and you just kind of come out of certain sequences, you're like, oh my god, I can't believe all of that stuff worked.
That sounds very, very LucasArts to me.
It's very, very LucasArts, but it's just so good.
Well, excellent then. So we're talking about, you gave it a gold award, 9 out of 10. This is, again, £9.99, I think. I think it's not the cheapest thing in the world. Mm. But iPhone, iPad, also Switch. If you want to take a run at it, I want to see this now because I've just seen the screenshots. And yes, I'm getting all nostalgic and misty-eyed. I want to bash. Let's jump over to the other sort of biggest release, I suppose, of the week, which was Morphite, which I teased earlier. So... it's a bit No Man's Sky. Well, it's a lot No Man's Sky, only on mobile. Though it does make some noticeable tweaks to the formula. So if you look at it, imagine an even more stripped down low poly version of No Man's Sky, which originally wasn't a very high poly game, but it keeps that pink and purple and psychedelic 60s sci-fi book cover styling. And it is also based around similar loops to No Man's Sky, which is flying between planets, lots of which are randomly generated, going around scanning in plants, flora, fauna, little beasties, trying not to get killed by them while you're scanning them in order to get the perks, collecting minerals that you'll need for, you know, your ship and your bits and bobs. Basically, if you've played No Man's Sky, all this probably sounds very familiar. The difference here is that it's got more of a focused story. It starts off with you being a character with a name and you working for a guy who has a name and him sending you off on missions and you discovering other characters. And it's got a focused central narrative, which was one of the biggest criticisms about No Man's Sky when it first came out, which was that you just dumped in on a rock and you can do what you like, but there's no real reason to do any of it other than just because you want to upgrade your ship. And that's not what this is. There is a much more focused adventure there for you with side missions, which take place on randomly generated planets, if you want to just wander off and have a bimble around. Harry has played more than me and really, really liked it and said it doesn't feel empty. And this is Crescent Moon who's made the game, and some of their big old RPG style things kind of have felt sort of empty. So I'm thinking of Exile specifically, that big sort Mass Effect-esque looking game, which was just, there was nothing in that world and there was no reason to go anywhere. It was just a bit rough around the edges as well, but mainly it's just vast, empty, desolate wastelands and you're running along on a space bike going, there's no real reason to be here, this is tedious. It handles surprisingly well, very smooth on the phone that I played it on, and I was immediately given purpose, which I approved of. So that one is, I'm going to say $7.99. Lots of quite expensive premium games out this week, which is heartening in some ways, especially if you're listening to this and you're a fan of that kind of thing. But More Fight is the name. It's front page on the App Store. You can go and find it now if you like. Very quickly, final new releases. We've got Another Lost Phone, which is a sequel to a something lost... What was it called? A something lost phone?
A normal?
Normal.
Yeah, normal. There you go. Yeah. So it's another one of those. We gave it a silver award saying basically it is the same thing again, but they've really looked at what went before, saw what worked, saw what didn't, and then upgraded everything. So the UI is completely different, much more slick, a lot more believable as an operating system. And the story, you know, the exploratory nature of the whole thing, where you're digging through the phone and trying to find out what it is and who's dropped the phone. Like, if you're not familiar with it at all, it's just a phone UI. You open it up and it's an operating system. And it's like you're browsing through somebody else's phone that you found on the floor and you need to dig through and rummage through all their apps and whatnot and SMS messages and try and determine what the hell's happened to this person. And it becomes kind of a weird mystery coupled with the voyeurism of scrolling through someone else's texts, like, you shouldn't be doing that, you terrible person. But I'll just read this one and see what they say. And that's available at the minute. It's Silver Award. We gave it. We liked it. And you should probably like it as well. NBA 2K18 came out. Again, £7.99, $7.99. I've not played this. So I'm not even going to offer a comment. But another £8 premium game.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. This week. Yeah,
as you've all heard, I was talking to the dude from Atypical Games and he was sort of lamenting the issues they've had going premium. And there's a lot of premium stuff.
Yeah, cool. It definitely seems... I've noticed that this year. It's been generally premiums just sort of been climbing up and up and up again with like more games.
Hmm. Don't know how to take this. Interesting.
Can I flag up a game quickly, James?
Oh, go on.
I found this game this week that I've been quite surprised by called Idle Pouring. And it's essentially Ragnarok Online, which is an old-school PC MMORPG, like a really popular one from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been turned into a clicker, but it's really good, because it's an MMO in the traditional sense. Your character's just sort of endlessly grinding. In an online community, you can talk to loads of other people dotting about. And it just, I don't know, the two things just sort of really lend themselves really well to each other, and I'm really impressed by it.
What do you say it's called? Idle Pouring?
Yeah, like P-O-R-I-N-G. I don't know why they've called it that. If it was called Idle RuneScape, it would make complete sense.
Right.
But it's just such a smart idea. Like, I've never thought of it before, but MMOs sort of are founded on grinding, which clickers are too. But I've always found with clickers, like, I'm not really encouraged to sort of play them long-term, because I'm like, well, what's the real goal here?
Mm-hmm.
This sort of adds the MMO goal, which is to obviously increase in power and make your dude look nicer and increase in skills and stuff like that. And it's a clicker, so you don't really have to sit and constantly play it. So it takes it's got all the grind that you want from MMO, but you don't have to actually do any of it. You just sort of watch him do it, or you manage him while he's doing it, your character.
Okay. Oh yeah, so it's actually called RO, Idle Pouring, so it is a Ragnarok game.
Yes, definitely a Ragnarok game. So it's got all like the music you'll remember, the visual style's exactly the same.
I see.
And you basically just watch a character running endlessly through like a 3D environment, battling enemies.
On your behalf.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it'll tempt anyone on the podcast. Like, I don't think anyone here really likes that stuff, but I'm a massive fan of MMOs, and it just feels like, if anyone else is, I really recommend checking it out, because it just really feels like a perfect way to do it on mobile. Like, I've always found that the MMOs that I've played so far, like Forsaken World Mobile, MU Origin, I've always just kind of lacked something. It's just felt like sort of forcing the PC structure onto mobile.
Yeah.
It just hasn't really worked. But this is just a really smart way to do it.
I've just seen it on Google Play. Everyone seems to love it. But then everything's got a 4.5-star review on Google Play, so I don't trust any of it. It's like, I turned it on, it works. Yeah, brilliant, 4 stars. Okay, so RO: Idle Pouring is the name of that one, if you wanted to check it out, if you like games that play themselves. Sorry, that sounded sarky. It wasn't meant to. I'm sure it's all great. Okay, that'll do for this week. Thank you all for listening. Do the liking with the sharing and the subscribing. I was going to say we'll be back next week. Now, I'm not going to be here Thursday or Friday of next week, so there may not actually be a podcast, unless you two fancy recording some kind of thing in the meantime. So just be warned, there might be a wee break, but we will return very, very soon for more discussion. So thank you all for listening as always, and bye.
Bye.
Bye.